We're happy to make podcasts available for selected EdWebinars for your listening pleasure. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.
Good afternoon and welcome. We are so pleased to have all of you joining us this afternoon for this great discussion on strategic technology planning and investment. We're going to look at priorities, cost, and the impacts in today's learning environments. If there's ever been a topic more timely, I'm not sure what it is. So we're really so happy that you can join us. I'm really pleased to welcome our three superintendents who will be sharing their wisdom, their expertise, and practice with us, Dr. Doug Brubaker, Dr. Ann Levitt, and Dr. Christy Wilson. So thank you all for being here. I'm very pleased to, again, as I said, welcome our group here today. I'm Ann McMullen, and it is my pleasure to serve as the project director for COSIN, the Consortium for School Networking Empowered Superintendent Initiative. I was a 34-year educator in the Klein School District outside Houston, Texas, 18 years as a classroom teacher and 16 years in ed tech before my family moved to Los Angeles, where I am based now. And I had my own consulting firm focusing on leadership in education. And that is how I happened to be able to serve with COSIN in this role. And I am so pleased to introduce you to my friend and longtime colleague, Dr. Cheryl Abshire, who is the chair of ClassLink's Senior Advisor Group. And Cheryl, we'd love for you to tell us a bit about ClassLink. And so glad to have you with us.
Well, thank you, Anne. As you said, we have been colleagues and friends for years. I served over 40 years as an employee of the Calcasieu Parish Public Schools in Lake Charles, Louisiana, and a school teacher, school principal, librarian, and then almost 25 years as the chief technology officer, and have worked closely with COSIN, the past chair on the board. And so I'm thrilled to be working with Ann in this initiative and ClassLink. So are we going to move to a ClassLink side? Yes. Well, ClassLink is a premier software solution that I love the logo, and I love the more time learning, less time logging in, because as a former CTO, that was a real bane of my existence. And I think what we're all seeing around the country now with so much remote, hybrid, and even in-person learning, more and more devices have made their way into classrooms, and we would all say hooray to that. But the challenges exist about connectivity, logons for every different system. And so ClassLink is that premier solution for single sign-on, analytics, data, and they've been serving over 22 years. Just a small snapshot of some of the organizations they work with. If there is an award to be won in the ed tech space, ClassLink has won that award because they've been around long enough to see what's needed in education, in K-12, and they've responded to that in kind. And that's why it's my pleasure to spend time with them and to work with them. This is a free resource that ClassLink has provided, classlink.com/remote learning. As they rose to the occasion when we all began to close schools in March, and they said, how can we help? And so the group of senior advisors, along with ClassLink staff, put together these resources that are offered if people are clients of ClassLink or not. But I have found that once you see what they offer, you're like, bring me some of that. And that's what we did in our school district in Lake Charles. So AM ClassLink is honored to be sponsoring this series, and ClassLink thanks COSIN and certainly all the superintendents and participants for coming together to network and learn more from each other.
Thank you, Cheryl. Great to have you with us, and we all are grateful to ClassLink for their continued sponsorship of this series. Thanks so much. All right. I would like to introduce to you then our three speakers today. One is a good friend and colleague, Dr. Doug Brubaker. Doug, if you would tell people just a brief history of your bio, how you got to point one to being superintendent. How did that happen?
Sure. Well, I started out as a fourth grade teacher about 26 years ago, and have held a several different positions within school districts. Probably one of the more unique ones is serving as a director of instructional technology and a CTO. Most of those years were in Texas, and recently was in Arkansas for 4 years, and then this January returned to Texas at Texarkana ISD, and I'm really pleased to be back. I also have the CETL certification. We'll put in a plug for that. It's really a helpful credential to have. So really pleased to be with our other panelists today, including Dr. Ann Levitt.
Thank you, Doug. Well, Ann.
Good afternoon, everyone. And I just want to start by thanking Ed Webnett, Colson, AASA, and ClassLink for providing this opportunity for us to talk with my colleagues. It's always good to see Christy. Definitely good to see Doug in his new space. And just happy to be able to talk about where we are. I'm in Savannah, Georgia. That is my home state and district. I grew up in the district. But I left here after being a speech and language pathologist and principal to just explore a little bit, and ended up in Dayton, Ohio, where I was acting superintendent. From there to higher ed, Antioch University and Yale University School of Medicine, still very close and dear to my heart, and then returned home to take care of my ailing parents. I ended up being superintendent in Savannah. That was not the plan, but I definitely am enjoying the experience. On the way here, I was director of an ed tech center at Macon State University, where I eventually became the dean of teacher education. I've also been a public school board member, so I've kind of had the whole experience. But I'm enjoying this round as superintendent, and especially am able to use my knowledge that I earned and learned as a director of an ed tech center. So this is very Thank close you. To me, and I'm just delighted to be here with my colleague, Christy Wilson, also.
Thank you. Christy, please give us your brief bio.
Good afternoon, friends. And it is a pleasure, like Anne and Doug said, to be here with all of you. I wish we were here somehow in person, but with that opportunity, I love to see people drop in the chat. As we all, you know, oftentimes we wouldn't necessarily see as many people as we are right now. So with that opportunity, we see a lot of folks that we wouldn't normally. And my road to the superintendency, it comes from a special education background like Anne. I was a special education resource room teacher for many years. And then I also was a high school math teacher. So I had the whole the gamut there from elementary ed and then also high school. I'm beginning my eighth year as a superintendent in Buckeye, but I have had a varied experience through all kinds of directors and school administration, mainly on the West Coast. But I love to be with colleagues. I love to see folks engaged in learning. And I think that education is just always evolving, and we do a great service by networking and learning together. So I just want to thank COSIN, Ed Webb, ClassLink, and of course AASA for the opportunity to be here together learning with all of you.
Thank you. Thanks to the three of you. It is just an honor to have you here. Just a little brief history. I wanted our participants to understand that AASA and COSIN are partners in this webinar series, but also have been partners for quite some time when AASA and COSIN came together to develop what was called the Empowered Superintendent Toolkit. And Christy, in your current role as president of AASA, I'd like to ask you just briefly, why did that make sense for the Superintendent Association and the Networking IT Association to come together and do this? How did that seem to be the right thing to do?
And I think the biggest piece there is, as we know, that you can't be, as a chief technology officer, you can't be the only one that speaks and advocates for technology to be first in a tool or just an innovative resource on its own. So coming together with AASA and COSIN together, it's a partnership. The toolkit, as many of people on the call probably have referred to. I know I have. I know as I speak to folks across the United States, they notice and they see that it's a one pager that can help folks refer to as they try to get folks on the same page. As they try to do planning. And again, just to hit this point home, you can't be the one person in your district on your own trying to, message out the importance of technology.
Thank you, Christy, for that. Right. And to our attendees, I would say, if you're interested, this is a free resource for you, cozen.org/superintendents, and you can download the Superintendent Toolkit. And then Christy also mentioned the one pagers, and those too are available. These are documents that COSEN and AASA have produced together to really help superintendents and school leaders lead technology initiatives with their community, with their school board. These one pagers address topics, as you see there, accessibility, cloud computing, cybersecurity, which has become a huge issue in the last several months. But in these one pagers, the language is not techie talk. The language is language that will make sense to all the communities that you are serving. So we encourage you to take a look. And we're actually going to be referring to one today in this webinar series on the strategic technology planning and investment. And again, the one pagers are also available for free to download at cozen.org/superintendents. You can download the whole set, or you can download one or two individuals, whichever you need at the time. So we encourage you to take a look at those. As we look at that one pager on strategic technology planning and investment, it really is divided up into three sections, as you see there: total cost of ownership, looking at student outcomes and budget management, and then also the value of investment. So those are the three areas that I really want to dig into with our superintendents today to see how they approach all three of these when they are looking at planning and investing for technology. But before we start, I'd like to invite our participants to kind of think about those three areas on your own: total cost of ownership, student outcomes and budget management, and value of investment. And if you think about your own experience in your district, whatever your role is, which of those three seems to be the most challenging? And EdWeb has now posted that survey, that poll for you, and we'd like you to just go ahead and respond. I'm going to give you about 45 seconds to do that. And we will keep your response in mind as we continue to go through the webinar today. I don't know, Doug, Christy, Ann, are you surprised by what's popping up now, that it does seem to be student outcomes and budget management is an area that is a bit of a challenge for many folks? You know, when
I think it's really helpful, though, Ann, especially as for us in Buckeye, we really leverage this kind of information when we're working with our community for levies. And we're trying to get our communities to understand that we may have to levy certain tax rates, et cetera, for better student outcomes with technology. So sometimes, you know, our school district is a fast growing school district, but we also have some of the older community that doesn't quite understand the value, and that's where that return on investment comes in. And so some of that information that's been provided in the toolkit, I have been able to say to the community, look, when we leverage our dollars a little differently, when we show them the value of technology long term, I've been very successful in passing our, we call them overrides in Arizona, but it's bonding and the capacity to get your community on board to get that one-to-one technology initiative in place for better student outcomes.
Perfect. Yeah. And we will explore that a bit more, but hang on to that thought, Christy and Ann and Doug, because when we get to that section, we want to dig more into that. Regina, I think that's good for the poll. I think we've gotten our sense of where it is. So thank you all to our participants for letting us know where your thinking is on this right now. I would like to also just give a little context for each of you to understand the districts where our three superintendents are currently working as they begin to share their expertise around planning. So Doug, give us a bit about Texarkana ISD in Texas.
Sure. So of course, we're right on the state line with Texas and Arkansas, and we have about 7,100 students. We have a fairly new virtual school of 800 students. It's about 2 years old, so that's a pretty big thing. It's a very competitive environment. We have about 1,200 transfer students from other districts who choose to come to TISD. About 1,000 staff. SES data would mean about, I'd say, 72% free and reduced here. So that gives you a little bit of a sense of where we are and some of the things that we're working on.
Very helpful. Thank you, Doug. Ann Levitt, what about Savannah?
So hello from beautiful Savannah, Georgia. We have a city-county district. We have about 37,000 students. So those are our 37,000 reasons to do a great job every day. We employ about 5,600 staff. And we are, of course, one of the largest employers in our area. Our district is about 67% free reduced lunch. And we cover about 426 square miles. We are, of course, positioned right on the coast of Georgia. If you have not had an opportunity to visit, please do. We find ourselves to be the 10th largest school district in the state of Georgia. All the others, those that are larger than us, are in the Atlanta metro area. So that gives you some idea about Savannah and the size of it.
Thank you, Ann. And Christy, please fill us in about your Buckeye Elementary District in Arizona.
So Buckeye Elementary District is a K-8 district. We are a fast-growing school district about 20 miles west of Phoenix. We have right now 7 K-8 schools. We have 2 preschools. We opened, like Doug, an online school. And we're breaking ground. Well, we broke ground soon to open we considered our 9th school that is a school for the future. It's a very sought-after C-STEM academy that's set to open in July. And we have about 5,500 students, 80% free and reduced. Like Ann, let's see, we're not quite as big as Ann. We have about 212 square miles. And let's see what else. We're a minority district, but the majority of our students are Hispanic. And yeah, we're just a very fast growing school district. So that has its challenges, especially right now.
The data about your district. So thank you for sharing that. So the first area we're going to get into is this issue of total cost of ownership and the notion that EdTech comes with both direct and indirect costs. And Doug, I'm going to start with you on this. Just briefly, tell me how you play around with this issue of total cost, looking at variable cost, fixed cost. How does that play into your thinking when you have to make decisions around technology purchases?
Sure. Well, one of the biggest changes that I've seen over the last, well, really over the course of my career is just an understanding that our technology is kind of like our utilities, right? We think in terms of if the water isn't running and the air conditioner's not on, school is just not functioning correctly. So it just has to be a high priority as opposed to an extra. When you look at the total cost of ownership, the best phrase that I ever heard as a technology director that a colleague shared with me is, beware of free, because free is sometimes free like a puppy is free, right? So if you get something that's free, either through a grant or through a vendor, then there's a lot of strings attached sometimes. So the role of the CTO, one of the most important things is to, when that proposal gets brought forward, to help parse out what the other costs are and so that the implementation can go well. And the other thing that often gets deleted from budgets, which is one of the hardest things to cope with, is training, right? And so it's really important for a good implementation to not only have the equipment and the bandwidth, but also to have really good training to make sure that teachers and staff are prepared to use the tools. So those are just some of the thoughts that I kind of wrap around TCO.
I appreciate that, Doug. As we look at this, I wanted to let our audience know that there is a resource that COSIN provides on total cost of ownership, and it's an assessment tool for you to take a look at and kind of analyze those very points that Doug was just talking about. And that, too, is available at COSIN.org/TCO. But as we continue this conversation, Christy, let me start with you, and then Ann, I'll come back to you on this. When we look at the tips and recommendations for performing your own total cost of ownership assessment, Other than number 7, which is the example workbook that's in the resource that is provided, Christy, any thought on any of these 1 through 6, how you do that? How do you get executive support or use a baseline or any one of these other 6 items on the screen that you might want to address or tell us how you work with that?
Yeah, I think all of them are excellent. And the one that stuck out to me as just a fantastic example or something that a real asset to us is the survey. I think that helps you really just gather information. The more information you have, that old adage of information is power. With folks like Doug, if you ever want to retire and you want to come work as a CTO or you get tired of the superintendency, you know, but I think the survey tool and survey users for indirect labor, that's my best advice to anyone.
Ann Levitt, anything to add on that one?
Nothing to add. I think all of them are very, very important, and each community is different. Some communities are much more in tune with the needs, but some, like my community where we have lots of retired folks, don't necessarily see the value in all the kids having devices, and sometimes do not understand what it takes in order to keep that investment up. So we believe in educating. We think making good estimates is important, but also helping people understand through our surveys and other conversations why there's a total cost that may not be observable. And we think it's important to make sure that those information sessions and those tools include all that information. Assume nothing is what we do.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And the notion that you've really got to give as much data as possible. And we all know that every experience, we continue to learn. So you're not going to know everything at the onset, but to share as much data as possible as you can as you're starting that process is very helpful. So thank you to the three of you for that. Let's jump into this one, since this was the one that really seemed to be the big concern. And I always tell people the reality is, as much as we talk about technology, the fact is we're in the learning business, and that's why student outcomes matter. And technology is a tool to help us do that. But Ann Levitt, let me start with you on this one. Talk to me a little bit about how you do this balance and how you help and communicate to your board, to your staff, to the community at large, this balance between student outcomes and budget.
Well, I think it's a really good time to talk about how we use the technology. The technology does not replace the teaching. The technology is a part of it. And so the more we help our teachers understand how to use the technology to support learning, it's a vehicle. It's actually a great way to keep current. If our teachers are integrating the use of technology, then people see it as a part of everyday life. And it's much easier for board members and other decision makers to understand that it will improve outcomes. Number one, students have access to current information, and I don't have to wait for a textbook to be printed in Texas or New York. It also allows us to ensure that professional learning is happening with our teachers all the time. So if they can see those improved outcomes based on easy access and updated technology available at their fingertips, then they can see an improvement to student outcomes, especially when we're remediating and enhancing. So we make sure that that information is shared liberally and widely, so we don't have those discussions about whether it does improve student outcomes.
Thank you for that, Ann. Doug, I'm going to hone in on that item 2 on there, talking about short-term cuts in IT funding. And while that may seem prudent, how do you navigate that when you know the long-term effect may not be such a good one?
Well, you have to make it a priority. That's a good point. And in terms of communicating it, I think that Ann made a really good point about the importance of communicating that with staff. One tool that we used in order to build understanding of how important technology is, it's really hard. Christy had mentioned how it's kind of tough when people are of a certain age, perhaps, and they're retired to vote for a millage in order to fund technology. We did a school tour where we just invited people in to see, and that proved to be a really pretty effective way to, and then put the videos out of these seniors coming through and saying, I had no idea how important these tools are. So, you know, just as we don't have a separate class for pencil or for calculator, the idea that we have to stress the importance of technology sometimes seems a little bit foreign to us, but it just has to be considered like the utilities, that it's just something that we have to have in order for learning to take place. I'd like to think that it's getting easier as all of us are doing things like mortgages and applying for college and all these different things, that there may be a little registering for vaccines, right? That there's a greater understanding of how important a role technology plays for all of us.
Yeah, I think your point that it is a utility today and needs to be as accessible as water and electricity for all the reasons that you mentioned, well beyond even education, is true. Christy, I want to point out, Lonnie put a good comment in the chat, and I'd like to invite you to respond to how you do that. He says, may I add, we need to include parents and the community in the planning, the discussions, implementation, and the trusted follow-up. So, and Doug mentioned the tour that they did. How do you bring in your broader community into these budget discussions?
There's a couple different ways, I think. And it's funny, Doug, that you mentioned the tours. One of the ways that I think you can always involve is, you know, your standard committees, foundations. I was just going to share a little 30-second story. A few years ago, we were really trying to get our community engaged in some of the innovative technology, just different things we were doing. And Z-Space was something we wanted to have in one of our schools, and it was expensive. And so we wanted the foundation to help fund a Z-Space lab. And I knew that would be kind of a heavy lift for a variety of reasons, but parents and a stakeholder group was formed. And to Doug's point, we had a lot of active adults, I would classify them, come participate in the actual Z-Space, you know, functionality of what that looks like. And there's a couple things I think that helped us get our bond passed, and it helped us. The foundation paid for the lab, and it wasn't cheap. You know, it was an expensive thing, but it also helped the teachers and the parents understand the role of technology and the role of the teacher and the parents at home. Using those technology, the innovation technology and what's changing. And that's been a few years ago. And thank goodness we did that. Fast forward to where we are now with teaching and learning and innovation and technology, et cetera. And I'm just really thankful that we had some people in our district forward thinking in that area. So, and those are just things that really help you with long-term planning. And you can just continue to do that. So
good to know and good model to follow. So thank you, Christy, for that. The third area around strategic planning is looking at the value of the investment. And you can see some quotes there. The decision to approve or amend a technology project deserves strategic thought. And we've got to look at educationally critical, yet the qualitative benefits. And we've talked about that a little bit at this point, but let's explore a little bit more on the value of investment. In fact, COSIN does provide a tool for you, a methodology to look at things like the return ROI, looking at quantitative and qualitative data. Doug, let me go back to you on this. How do you balance that ROI and looking at qualitative data that you can truly articulate, or that you can't necessarily articulate, and quantitative data that you can put on charts and graphs? And so how does that work for you?
Well, I think my colleagues on the panel have done a really good job of describing the importance of surveys. And after each question, I think it's helpful to put a comment section so that people have the opportunity to just provide some of that qualitative data, whether it's either to staff or to parents or kids. And then you can do content analysis on it, which yields some insights as to what the other numbers mean. The quantitative things that we look at, sometimes it's hard to really find those measures that are really helpful. What I've found is by using some of the pieces of infrastructure, you can get reliability data and find out what your uptime is mm-hmm. on some of those critical systems. And so, you know, kind of a before and after to show the value of investment And at one point, we had measured the cost of downtime. So there were times in one district where I worked when I first started to get start when I first got started there, where we had 3 days of downtime for the whole network. Mm-hmm. And being able to add up all the salaries and figure out how much it costs the district, that was a point that was that really resonated with the CTO. The other thing is, it's kind of like when you think about your car and about how the longer you keep your car, the more expensive repairs you have. If you tabulate your work orders and then show how much you're paying for new circuit boards, new parts, over time, you know, it does cost less to buy the new device. So some of those quantitative measures are not quite as intimidating, and are, you want to find data that already exists in your organization if you can, I guess is what I'm trying to say, instead of trying to invent something different that may take a lot of time. Does that make sense?
Makes perfect sense, and it really good advice there. And again, I would say to our participants, if you need some help kind of doing that kind of thinking that Doug just described, I encourage you to take a look at cozen.org/VOI for value of investment to have a methodology to help you work through that. As we continue this conversation around value of investment, Ann Levitt, let's talk about how you do that. How do you assess both your proposed projects and those that are ongoing? But particularly as you've got to think about, okay, we're going to move in this direction, and this is the value we're going to get out of this. How do you approach that thinking?
So we had an opportunity to actually practice this when the pandemic set in. We had been trying for years to become a one-to-one district. And then all of a sudden the pandemic hits and we actually are in a position where we have to do it. Yeah. There isn't another way. So we actually built in, based on our Return to Learn, Reopening Schools Task Force, and a number of trusted colleagues in the community with whom we'd been working for years on this, trying to get moving to the one-to-one, we called them all together and said, hey, give us some really good ideas about how we get people to understand what we're trying to do and why it's important. While we had been able to implement and one-to-one in many of the schools, district-wide across 37,000 kids, it just wasn't happening. We needed to know how best to do that. So after we did our own individual assessment as a district, then we also decided, by talking with those individuals, which was maybe 150 or so people, what are some of the things that we look to accomplish based on this kind of implementation, and how will we build the support to sustain it over time? It was really helpful in that we had that community buy-in from them. Of course, we had to do some work with that group as well, but they helped us get that message out. They also helped us formulate all the points that we needed to cover in our public campaign with our internal staff, our external community, as well as our partners upon whom we had come to depend on this kind of support over the past few years. So we did it quick and in a hurry, and I can tell you now that all of my students have devices. I don't have to worry about that. Another way to support them if those devices go down, hotspots, you name it. And otherwise, we would have been waiting 10 years to get it done.
Thank you for that, Anne. Yeah, and again, to our participants, if you need some help in that kind of guidance, there is a project cost estimator and also a project benefits tool for you, again, to download at cozen.org/VOI for value of investment. Christy, one of the things we look at there in that tool is a number of different case studies. And Anne has just shared with us what she did around mobile learning and one-to-one. I'm just wondering, as you look at the list there, are there any things that you approached, if we were doing a case study on Buckeye Elementary School District, tell us just briefly a little bit what that might be and how that case might have evolved there.
Yeah, it's funny because I think just that one thing that comes to my mind is that before the pandemic, I would say, I think it has to do with the culture in your district. And someone put something in the chat, and it just popped up about having trust and, you know, making big changes. And we all know this, you know, whenever you do a big initiative, for it to really be successful, you do have to have a culture of trust. But I will say that I am so thankful, and it was just maybe dumb luck really on our part, that we made the, it was strategic on our part, but it was, I guess, the timing was really good that we switched platforms. We went from, you know, some people were doing Microsoft Office in the district office. Some schools were on Google Classroom. Some were on others. And, you know, 2 years ago, we had switched and made a very uniformed transition for one platform, and also we were just about one-to-one and very thoughtful, strategic, you know, planned. And, you know, I'm so grateful to the work that had been done and planned for that, just because going forward, looking back, I'm like, oh my gosh, had we not done that and the pandemic hit, we would be in a very different position than we are now. So
I appreciate that. You know, having an abundance of tools is good, but it can be very complex and very challenging for people to
Absolutely.
Be able to do that. It gets down to basically everybody speaking the same language, doesn't it? And so that's really important. I appreciate that you brought up about the comment in the chat about outreach and building trust. Mm-hmm. Trust is what it's all about. And my goodness, in this last year, when we've had to navigate so many different areas, that element of building trust is really critical. One of the areas that, you know, technology for the most part does not come free. And so we have to have a good working relationship between your chief financial officer and your chief technology officer and the superintendent. And in fact, COSEN quite recently partnered with ASBO, the Association of School Business Officials, and created a toolkit on to help understand the value of the school district's business and technology departments working together. Doug, tell me briefly, and I know you've not been in Texarkana all that long, so maybe from your prior district, but how do you bring those two departments together, business and technology department, to work together?
Yeah, I was just thinking about that. And in my last district, I have a great CTO here. A great CFO here. The one in my last district was really exceptional too, and won a lot of state awards. The number one thing that you can do, I think, is to get someone who's really student-centered into that role. That's a really important piece. And I think that there's an understanding among the business office employees that when their technology runs, things go more effectively. And they're conditioned to think about replacement cycles and sustainability. So I would just share with you that one of the biggest things that came out of our millage election, which was the first one to pass in 30 years in that district, an $825,000 set aside so that every year there would be money for replacement of devices or whatever would come later. You know, one of the hazards in working with your CFO is that we don't always know what the next thing's going to be and how much it's going to cost, but we know there's going to be something, and we know it's going to probably be expensive. And so working with your CFO to ensure that there is money set aside, a substantial amount of money to make those replacements and those ongoing investments, is just really important. I think if the CFO knows that it's a priority for the superintendent, they'll help get that done.
No, thank you. And that, I mean, as a superintendent, you've got a cabinet, and I'm assuming for most of you, your CTO sits on your cabinet as well as the CFO. And so, you know, you're constant. Talk about building trust, right? Not only outside, but within your area as well. It's just really critical. So we're happy to provide a resource to help with that. So I'm going to invite the three of you now. I mean, you know, we're all in the learning business, right? So what are the lessons learned? Christy, I'm going to start with you. If you think back to when you first started in your role as a superintendent and you were having to do this tech planning and investment, are there things that now you know that you would have done differently back then? And we can maybe spare some of our colleagues who are watching from going through some of that same learning that any one of you had to do. But Christy, I'll start with you on that.
Oh my gosh, it's such a good question. You know, I think, Well, and I always learn from so many people. That's why I love to get on webinars and just listen. I take these nuggets. I think the biggest reflection and lesson learned, just as I continue the journey, is to empower those around me. Oftentimes my first few years as a superintendent, I think I kind of struggled, or I was just kind of learning that you have a whole army around you of folks that have so much to offer in terms of their skills and their dispositions. And, your first few years, you're just trying to, you're just trying to figure out how to do the job. And, now, like I said, kind of getting in, I have a really pretty good established routine and a wonderful team. And I didn't know then that empowering others is so powerful. It truly is. And that really, I think, establishes that culture of trust and risk taking. And that, the other thing kind of coupled with that is that education is continuing to evolve. I mean, it's always, always changing. So I think as a leader, as long as we instill that trust that to critically think and to love to learn, not only in our students, but amongst ourselves, that, the sky is the limit in terms of what we can offer each other and ourselves. And I think early on in my career, I'm not sure I really understood that to, its fullest. So.
Yeah. So that phrase, that's the way we've always done it, is not the path to follow, right?
You really got to be able, if you're going to be a true trailblazer and let folks, like we do with students in our classrooms, let them blaze the trail and get out of their way,
Anne Leavitt, anything that you think back on your early time in doing this and compare with today?
I think in my first time around, I didn't connect as much as I needed to with the business community, because the bottom line is, when students graduate from high school, I want them to be able to be enrolled, enlisted, or employed directly. Eventually, every scholar needs a job. And what we know is the business world is where they're going eventually, either as an entrepreneur or as a worker directly before they become an entrepreneur. And that technology over there is changing so quickly. Right. So I need the business community's support in making sure that my students have access to the kinds of tools that they will need once they graduate. I'm not always able to do that with just my resources alone. So I need their support. I need their support in my messaging to the community and to my board and to my staff on why that technology and those skills are so important. But I also need them to be a part of my internship and apprenticeship processes so that my students and families and board sees the value of that in preparing the next set of future leaders. So this time around, I have it down. I know how to make that work. And I know that they are key to making it work with not only resource allocation in terms of dollars, but also resources in terms of talent and opening the doors for young people. So that is probably the greatest lesson I've learned.
Thank you for that. And Doug, briefly, and anything, lesson learned on this whole issue of tech planning and investment that way back
then? Sure, probably the biggest. Sure, I would say probably the biggest one is phased implementation. So you plan, you pilot, you deploy, get the best training that you can. And another thought, at one point, the technology people really didn't ascend to the superintendency. It just wasn't one of those tracks. And someone shared with me that because technology touches everything, it can be a great preparation for that role, just as any other field can be.
I appreciate you sharing that. And actually, that's a good segue into the next question I'm going to pose. So, Doug, I'm going to start with you on this. And this goes to more in general superintendency. If you were teaching a course in Superintendency 101, What, Doug, is the best advice that you would give either to a current first-year superintendent, and my goodness, isn't this a year to be a first-year superintendent, but to a first-year superintendent or to those aspiring to be superintendents or serve in another district leadership position? Any quick words of wisdom to that audience?
I would just share what I said just a couple minutes ago about how this can be a good way to prepare too. Any field that you're in education, if you listen and learn what the central issues are, can be a great training ground for different positions serving students and communities.
Thank you for that. Christy, for you, any words of wisdom for aspiring superintendents?
Yeah, I just wrote down a couple of things here. Always reflect on your own learning. I think that's really, really important. Take time to reflect on your own learning. And the other thing that I think is super, super really just as important is to exercise and eat well. I think that those two are just really, really important. The superintendency can eat literally, you know, stress you. So if you just exercise and you eat well and you reflect, you'll survive it.
I like that. Anne Leavitt, any other words of wisdom as we move
on? I think my words would be collaboration. I just don't think we can do it by ourselves. And that means collaborating with all the stakeholders. As difficult and as time consuming as it can be, it's important. Of course, listening, listen and learn. And then I think having courage, you have to have the courage that it takes to make the decisions that are difficult and that people would say, I wouldn't want your job. And I've said to people, God probably wouldn't give it to you. but, you know, I just say it's really important to listen, collaborate, and be open to other ideas about how we move forward.
Very wise words from all three of you. Thank you for that. Very important. All right. I'm going to look real quickly in our Q&A folder and see if we have some questions that we haven't. Well, this is interesting. How can teachers make technology fun and engaging for the students? And I think, and we're going to talk a little bit more about our current situation, but any thought to add on that? How do you make it fun and engaging and not just screen staring?
I think you have to know what.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think you have to know what they like. You know, when you go fishing, you have to use what fish like. And so I think when you teach kids, you have to engage in the ways that they find helpful, ways that make sense to them. So they like games. So you got to learn to like games. You can teach them well using a game format. So I think we have to know how to use that technology to meet their individual preferences. Doesn't mean they'll get everything they want, but I think we have to do some of that.
It goes back to the listening that you talked about as well.
I would just add to that on that, and that this notion, we're talking a lot about this in our district where students have to be more, I would say, consumers. Producers versus consumers.
Yes.
So, you know, you've heard that term before, or that phrase rather. So, you know, they're not sitting and getting, and that goes for teachers as well. That drive and share, so that the experience is really, you know, that they're producing, and they're not that consumer of knowledge. So I would just offer that.
I would say to our audience, our three superintendents have graciously allowed me to share their email addresses with you along with their websites to their districts. So if you want to learn more from any of them, and there's so much that we could all be learning from them, feel free to reach out and to contact them as well. I do want to just ask very quickly, and Doug, I'll start with you, COVID-19. One of the comments in the chat was, if the pandemic has given us anything, it's given us the opportunity to change education and the way we do things. So just briefly, in Texarkana, Doug, what is the current status? Are students back in school face-to-face, or where are we now in Texarkana ISD as far as COVID is concerned?
Yes, ma'am. We're at about 85% in person, 15% still at home. So a pretty strong mix. And that's pretty similar to the district I came from, too. So a lot of kids in school.
Ann Levitt, what about in your district?
All of our students are virtual today, but on the 17th, our least independent learners will return. And then on the 22nd, all of the other learners who are interested will return. That'll be about 12,000 plus, and that's about a third of our district that'll be returning for hybrid. And then hopefully, you know, we'll be able to have a robust summer programming, and then hopefully in the fall, they'll all be able to return. Our numbers are still pretty high in Savannah.
Thank you for that. Christy?
We have very small some folks are in person participating. I would say, 3 to 5%, but March 15th, we are returning in person. And I was we've about 80% of our staff are receiving their second vaccination this week, next week. So by the time March 15th rolls around, almost all of our teachers and paraprofessionals, et cetera, caregivers, all those will be fully vaccinated. So not that means, we'll be safe, but March 15th we'll fully open.
I want to share with our audience a tool, and again, this is free to access, and this was something put together by ClassLink, AASA, AESA, COSIN, and CETA, a continuous learning rubric that gives you a chart to look at and measure where your district stands with continuing learning in this environment, and we've heard from the three superintendents where they are. It also gives you, you can score yourself, and then you can find some exemplars in the different areas, so encourage you to take a look at that. We shortened the address there of just tinyurl.com/continuous-learning-rubric, a free tool to help you through this. COSIN has also provided some resources for the current time period that we're in at COVID-19, techguidance.com, so take a look at that as well. I want to remind all of you about the resources that COSIN and AASA and ClassLink EdWeb all put together, but primarily COSIN and AASA on the website for COSIN.org/superintendents. And Christy, I think you have a little conference coming up sometime soon. You want to tell the audience quickly about
it? We do, and we hope you all will join us. We have the NCE, the National Conference on Education. It is going to be offered virtually, and as president, I would be remiss if I didn't mention, I would love to have everyone and all your friends just shoulder tap them all along and join us. We're doing our very best to offer a virtual conference. So it's there on February 18th and 19th. Thank you, Anne, for letting me do that.
And COSIN will be having its virtual conference in March 2nd through the 4th. So again, if you look at COSINconference.org, we would love to see you there. Many of the folks that we have been interviewing on these webinars will be there, and we'll be at the NCE virtual event as well. So we look forward to that. I want to thank the three of you so much, Doug, Ann, and Christy. This has been a tremendous conversation and really very beneficial and helpful as people think about planning and moving on. I want to also thank our sponsor, ClassLink, and I want to bring in Mary Badawala for a few minutes at the end here to share with you some interesting analytics that ClassLink has been able to pull together through this time period that we're in. So Mary, welcome, and please share with us what you've got.
Yeah, thanks, Anne, and thanks to the panel. This was a great conversation. So over at ClassLink, we provide a single solution to house all of your digital resources. And through that solution, we're able to collect data to really help you understand the state of engagement. And so I just wanted to share a little bit about the student story we saw with ClassLink's customers in the fall. So two little data points here. The first is, as you all are experiencing, engagement is up. So about 60% more students were engaging each day with ClassLink, and this is just looking at customers we served in both the fall semesters of 2019 and 2020. So engagement's up high, and not only has it's increased in terms of the consistency in which students are leveraging these data resources.
Good to know that.
Secondly,
there we are.
Many of you probably have seen this trend as well, but it's interesting to look at the data on it. We've seen engagement just skyrocket in terms of outside of traditional school hours for a very various reasons, students have needed to engage with resources outside the traditional day, and remote learning has truly realized the ability to have anytime, anywhere learning. So you can see here in this chart that we're looking just at weekends, but from 2019 to 2020, student usage on weekends, again, skyrocketed. It was about 200% more. We saw the same trend when we looked at after hours on weekdays. And we saw this for students, which is what we're showing, but we also saw it for teachers. So there's a lot of value in digging in to the remote learning data to help inform the types of things we talked about today. And these are just two high-level trends that we saw in our data. You can see here we've been speaking with our customers, and like the superintendent shared with us today, we've learned a lot in terms of remote learning and the things that can be put in place as best practices. So you can see them here. You can take a look. I'm not going to go over them because I know we're at time, but I just want to thank you all for attending today. And please, if you're not familiar with ClassLink, reach out and look into us. We love to partner with districts to help solve access issues. Thank you.
Mary, thank you. And we're grateful for the resources that ClassLink has provided and put together to help all education leaders use really good data to drive the decisions that we all have to make right now. I would like to encourage you to register for the next Ed webinar coming up, which is called Leading Learning in a Blended Environment. We address that some today, but we're going to look really get into what works for students, what works for teachers, what works for administrators. And we're going to look at blended in two ways: when a student is in a classroom and there is technology there, and when a student is home and there is technology, but we're blending maybe non-technology activities and stuff for students to do in a remote learning situation. So you can see our guests. We will have three superintendents again: Dr. Mark Benigni from Meriden Public Schools, Dr. Alan Seibert from Salem City Schools in Virginia, and Jason Van Heuklem from Winchester Public Schools. And we will also be joined by Diane Dorsch, who is with Digital Promise and Verizon's Innovative Learning Schools program. So we hope you all will sign up for that one. We look forward to seeing you next month on March 8th at 5 Eastern time for that. And with that, I am going to wrap it up and just give virtual hugs to our three superintendents. And thank you all so much for attending today. It was just great to have the discussion in the chat with our participants, and certainly with the three of you. For our participants, there is a short survey we would love for you to take to give us some feedback, and you can find that at tinyurl.com/edwebinareval. And we would appreciate knowing your thoughts, because we're always working on making these better and better. But Doug and Christy, I can't imagine it being any better. Thank you so much, and good luck to all of you.
Thank you.
And Mary, thanks for having you here.
Thank you.
And with that, we will sign off and see you next month. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
Good evening.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this EdWeb podcast. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.